While this is loading, I'll be describing the development and psychometric properties of a measure of healthy living quality of life that's intended to be function neutral, and I'll talk more about what that means. This is work that was part of the Rehabilitation Research and Training Center on Health and Wellness that was funded by the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. I have no relationships to disclose. Back in 2004, NIDER issued a request for proposals that included a call for developing a new measure of health-related quality of life based on a conceptual model of health in the context of disability. And in this model, there's a recognition that people with disabilities can be healthy and that function is not necessarily an integral part of HRQOL in this context. Specifically, the intent was to design a measure that would avoid a penalty based solely on functional limitation. So, for example, a number of existing measures of HRQOL assess ability to do things like walking or climbing stairs. So a person with a mobility limitation will always score lower on those measures, even if it's someone who's a wheelchair marathoner and is in excellent shape. So the idea was to pull out that assessment of function and just measure the health piece. OHSU was fortunate to receive funding for this project, and we assembled an expert panel to develop a conceptual model and to guide the process of creating this new measure. That panel included senior experts in the field and also some more junior panelists who were receiving mentoring from those senior panel members. And then we consulted with a variety of other experts throughout the process as needed. The first thing the panel did was define our terms, especially health and function, since that was what we wanted to distinguish between. We went with the World Health Organization definition of health as a balanced state of physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease. And we defined function as physical or mental activities whose performance can be directly affected by an underlying impairment. So it was measurement of those types of activities that we wanted to exclude from our measure. We then thought about a conceptual model of the components of health-related quality of life, and after reviewing the literature and other existing measures, we settled on four basic domains. That included physical health, mental health, and social health, very closely modeled on the World Health Organization definition. And then we also decided to include a fourth domain, which we initially were thinking of as spirituality or living one's values or a sense of meaning and purpose in life. We ultimately ended up calling that life satisfaction and beliefs. We also decided to develop an adjunct scale on environment. We weren't thinking of this as part of HRQOL per se, but rather as something that could impact all of these components of health, particularly for people with disabilities. And so we wanted to include the ability to measure and potentially to control for it. We went through a number of steps in developing the measure. I think in the interest of time, I'll skip the initial listing of these and just jump right into the details. Step one was generating a pool of items. To do that, we searched ProQualit, which stands for Patient-Reported Outcomes and Quality of Life Instruments Database. That's an online database of thousands of measures. We searched that looking for generic measures suitable for adults. And by generic, I mean measures that are intended to be applicable to anyone as opposed to being developed for people with specific conditions. We found 85 measures meeting that criterion, and there were a total of 648 items in those 85 measures. We copied those items in their original wording, and then grouped them into the domains in our conceptual model. Step two was selecting the items from that pool that we thought were essential to measuring health. And to do that, we asked our expert panel members to rate each of the items and indicate whether they thought it was important or not. And this was a simple yes or no vote. We then calculated content validity ratios, which is an indicator of reviewer agreement. It has different cutoffs to indicate significant agreement, depending on how many panel members there are. We had 10 members in our panel, so our cutoff for retaining items was that they had to have a CVR of 0.6 or greater. And 239 items met that criterion. Some examples of items that we excluded included, did you have difficulty twisting the lid off a jar? Were you always a cooperative patient? Were you satisfied with your children? These were things that weren't necessarily applicable to everybody, or that were measuring ability to perform certain actions or activities that we thought were too closely related to function. Step three was standardizing the item format. As we started to do this, we found that there was a lot of overlap in content, so we eliminated some of the obvious redundancies. We also noted that there were some content gaps. Specifically, we didn't have very many items measuring spirituality, so we did a search for spirituality measures to bring some more items into that domain. We also didn't have a lot on environment, so we consulted with Gail Whiteneck and looked at the Craig Hospital inventory of environmental factors to beef up that domain a bit. We then rephrased all of the items into a common format with a four-week reference, and we had seven response options indicating frequency, how frequently things had occurred within the past 4 weeks. Those response options were never or almost never, not often, occasionally, sometimes, often, very often, and always or almost always. And those were selected as approximately equal interval points based on empirical research of anchor words used in reading scales. Some of the sample formatted items: during the last 4 weeks, did you tire easily? Did you experience physical pain? Did you feel in charge of your own life? Step four was to screen for functional content. We sent the rephrased items back out to our expert panel. We also brought in another group of experts that we refer to as our validity panel, and these were people with expertise in specific types of disabilities. This included representatives from other RRTCs addressing specific disabilities, as well as advocacy groups working with certain disability types. We used a total face validity approach to judging functional bias, where we asked panelists to read the items and ask themselves, does this item penalize for impairment in mobility, impairment in communication, impairment in mental processing, or impairment in sensory processing? We asked people to just go ahead and flag items if they thought there was any chance there might be a problem. Some of the examples of items that were flagged included: did you have the physical flexibility to do the things you wanted to do? Did you listen to someone who needed to talk? And did people you trust tell you that you were forgetful? And if two or more people flagged an item, we went ahead and dropped it from the pool. Step five was a multicultural review. We sent the items out to two National Centers on Cultural Competence and Disabilities and asked them to check whether there was any possibility for cultural bias or maybe language that might be confusing. And that led to rewriting or dropping several of the items. One example of that is an item that read, "Did you have enough time for yourself?" For those of you who've known me for a while, it probably won't surprise you to hear that I'm a bit of an introvert. So I was thinking that a response of always or almost always on this item would be an indicator of positive health-related quality of life. However, the feedback we got from the cultural experts was that in some cultures, for example, Latino culture, if you were spending a lot of time by yourself, that might be considered a problem, that it would be healthier to be surrounded by family and friends. So as attached as I was to that item personally, we ultimately ended up dropping it because it was something that had the potential to be systematically interpreted differently by people from different cultures. Step six was cognitive testing. And for this step, we recruited 10 people with various types of disabilities and also 10 people without disabilities, because the intent was that this measure would be applicable regardless of disability. And those two groups were roughly matched on age, gender, and education. We administered all of the sample items and then interviewed people to determine how they were interpreting those items and whether they had any difficulties with understanding them. There were a few items that we revised or dropped based on the feedback, but for the most part, there wasn't much difficulty with understanding the items. The main complaint we got at this point was that there was still quite a bit of redundancy in the item pool. Step seven was a pilot test to empirically examine the performance of items from the pool and see whether there were differences between healthy adults with various types of functional limitations as compared to healthy adults with no limitations. So we had screened for functional content based on expert opinion, but now we wanted to actually look at the data and see if any of the items were performing differently based specifically on functional limitation. We were trying to take actual health differences out of the equation. We recruited participants in five different groups. four groups with functional limitations, including spinal cord injury, deaf or hard of hearing, legally blind, and people receiving care for a mental health condition, and then a reference group with no functional limitations. Our measures included a demographic questionnaire, and that had questions about functional limitations. We did specifically advertise for those certain functional limitation groups, but then we wanted to be able to check that as we brought people into the study. We also used an inventory of chronic conditions from the Canadian National Health Survey, and of course the item pool for the new measure. Because we were trying to exclude actual differences in health as a factor in these analyses, we used the chronic condition scale as a screener and screened out anyone with significant chronic conditions. And then the participants who were screened in completed the demographic form and the item pool. As we started our analyses, we looked at the functional limitation questions and found that some people had more than one type. Which is not surprising. We realize that that's true in the general population, but we decided that we wanted to be able to look at whether there was differential item performance based on specific types of functional limitation. And in order to do that, analytically, it would be better if there was no overlap between the categories. So we ended up excluding from analysis anyone who had multiple types of functional limitations. Our final sample then was 54 people with spinal cord injury only, 23 with hearing impairment only, 25 with vision impairment only, 68 with mental health conditions only, and 36 with no limitations. We had initially thought that we would analyze the hearing and vision groups together as a sensory limitations group. As we started doing the analyses, we were seeing some differences between those groups, so we ended up splitting them apart, but that's why those two groups are smaller than the others. And then the no limitations group is also relatively small because the number of people that we had recruited as not having any limitations, when we looked at their demographic forms, it turned out that they actually did have some limitations, primarily mental health conditions. So some of them were reclassified into that group. We conducted differential item functioning analysis to identify items performing differently for any of the functional limitation groups compared to the reference group. Specifically, we conducted partial correlations where we were correlating the individual item with a code that compared one functional limitation group to the reference group while controlling for overall scores on the domain from which that item was drawn. And we also controlled for demographic differences between groups. This resulted in dropping 13 items due to significant negative correlations for one or more functional limitation groups. We only dropped items from the four core HRQOL domains. We also had some environment items that had negative correlations, and we decided that that actually provided useful information about different kinds of barriers that people with different types of functional limitations might encounter, so we kept those in. We did, however, drop 23 more items for other reasons, including high redundancy based on very high correlations with other items, or low factor loadings based on an initial factor loading within each domain, or factor analysis within each domain. So at this point, we were ready to conduct a national field test. We were now down to 105 items in our pool. We worked with a variety of organizations and partners across the country to recruit 723 adults with various types of disabilities distributed across all four regions of the U.S. And we worked very hard to make sure that that sample had a gender, race, and ethnicity balance closely matched to the national population based on census data. We used the national field test data first and foremost to reduce the number of items in the pool. We examined a number of different analyses to help with that, including factor loadings, again, item response theory analyses, item total correlations, differential item functioning based on gender, race, or ethnicity. So we'd already looked at potential bias related to functioning, and now we wanted to make sure that there was no bias related to demographics. And in addition to the statistics, we also considered item content. Within each of our domains, we had identified a number of subtopics that we thought should be covered within that domain, and so we were wanting to make sure that we did have coverage of those topics within the items that we retained. I'd like to walk you through an example of one of our item selection decisions in choosing between two similar items. This table shows two items related to physical pain, and then in the columns, there are a number of different statistics that we looked at. So the first column is item total correlation. And there we were looking for correlations of 0.5 or above, so that there was a pretty good relationship between the item and the rest of the items on that domain. The next column is communality, which is an indicator of how much the item is contributing to the overall measure, not just that individual domain, but the entire measure. And again, we were looking for items with a communality of 0.5 or above. The next thing was factor loading. We wanted items that loaded strongly on their assigned factors. The magic target number, once again, 0.5 or above. Next, we looked at IRT measure. This is an indicator of how difficult an item is. So for example, it's easier to say that I had no major illness within the past 4 weeks than to say that I had no illness at all within the past 4 weeks. IRT measure was centered on 500 for these analyses with a range from 496 to 504, with the lower numbers indicating easier items. And lastly, IRT infit and outfit are both indices of how well the IRT model is fitting the data. Ideally, they should center around 1 with a range from about 0.5 to 1.5. Anything outside that range indicates that there may be extreme or inconsistent response patterns. So the first item we looked at was, did you cope with the physical pain you experienced? This one had a pretty pathetic item total correlation of 0.24. Communality was okay, 0.538, not stellar, but it met our cutoff. The factor loading was 0.49, so that just almost met our threshold. IRT measure was 496. That wasn't necessarily a good thing or a bad thing. We were just looking for a distribution across the range. This turned out to be one of the easier items. IRT infit was 1.54, which was just a little bit outside our ideal range, but output was 1.96, which was way outside the range. And then another problem with this item was that there was a significant negative correlation for blacks relative to whites in the differential item functioning analysis. So that indicates that there might be some racial bias associated with that item. The second item was, did physical pain prevent you from doing what you wanted to do? This one had a much stronger item total correlation of 0.69, also a stronger communality of 0.775, a nice strong factor loading of 0.54. IRT measure was about 500, so it was falling more toward the middle of the range, filling a little bit different niche than the other item. We ended up deciding that was okay in relation to the other items that we wanted to retain in this domain. And IRT input and outfit were both well within the desired range. So the first item is one that we ended up throwing out because it had a lot of problems. The second item performed better across the board, and that was one that we retained for our final measure. We went through this process with all of the items that we had field tested, and when we completed that, there was much rejoicing, as you might imagine. And we were left with 42 health items. This included 13 in the physical health domain, 11 in the mental health domain, 10 related to social health, and 8 related to life satisfaction and beliefs. We also had 15 environment items. The Chromebox alphas for all of these scales ranged from 0.88 to 0.97, so very high internal consistency reliability. We also wanted to see if our four domain structure that we had come up with for health-related quality of life was in fact reflected in the data from these items. So we conducted a confirmatory factor analysis comparing a one-factor, a two-factor, a three-factor, and a four-factor model, and we found that the four-factor model was in fact the best fit. So that supported the planned structure of the measure. We also wanted to make sure that we were measuring what we wanted to measure and not measuring what we didn't want to measure, so we looked at correlations with other measures of health as well as a measure of function. The first thing was the chronic condition scale. Here we saw weak to moderate negative correlations, which was the direction we expected because the health-related quality of life items were all scored such that a higher score indicated more positive health. We also looked at a secondary condition scale and found moderate to strong correlations, which we were very glad to see. And then ADLs and IADLs were what we considered an indicator of function. And here, just as we hoped, we saw relatively weak correlations. So it looks like we are picking up on health and not so much on function. We did look at whether the measure could distinguish between people known to differ on health, and we based this on self-report in relation to the single item, would you describe your health as excellent, very good, good, fair, or poor? We separated people into two groups, those who described their health as excellent, very good, or good, and those who described it as fair or poor. And people with fair or poor health scored significantly lower on all of the domains. And last, we looked at test-retest reliability. And for this, we used a new sample of 128 adults with disabilities, conducted repeat administrations of the shortened version of the measure about 25 days apart, and found interclass correlation coefficients between time one and time two. For all of the domains, they were 0.83 or higher, so good stability of the measure. So in summary, we now have a new measure, which we've called the Function Neutral Health-Related Quality of Life Scales, abbreviated as FUNRQL. It has a total of 57 items, including the environment scale. It's relatively free of a penalty on the basis of functional limitation, and it has strong psychometric properties. So this measure was developed as an alternative to existing measures that conflate measurement of function and health. It's intended to be appropriate for measuring health regardless of disability or functional limitation. And if one wants to look at the relationship between function and health, it could be used in conjunction with a measure of function, or it can be used on its own to measure health separate from function. I'll just put up my email address here, and I want to acknowledge one of my co-authors who's here in the room, Gail Royd, has a wealth of measure development experience, and we brought him on early on in the process as a psychometric consultant, and he conducted our IRT factor analyses. And I also want to acknowledge Gloria Kron, who was the original PI of the project and really the driving force behind development of the measure. Thank you.